Welcome to this week's Ox Talk, for Tuesday the 1st of July, 2025. This week's news items from the local papers were selected by Matthew Wood and Leslie Court, and are read by Janet Proudman and Leslie Court. The copying and the distribution of the USB sticks is by Michelle Lawful, and the technical officer, that's me, is David Field. Sunrise today is at 10 to 5, and sunset is at 9:25. And a couple of things on this day. On this day in 1863, the Battle of Gettysburg begins in Pennsylvania. Union forces halt the Confederate General Robert E. Lee's army of Northern Virginia. In 1916, it was the first day of the Battle of the Somme in World War I. The British Army losses totaled 19,240 men. In 1997, the UK returns Hong Kong and the new territories to the People's Republic of China.
A large crowd of protesters gathered in Oxford city centre to oppose the bombing of Iran and the UK selling arms to Israel. More than 100 people took part in the protest outside Carfax Tower recently. The US military bombed three nuclear facilities in Iran, joining Israel's continued strikes on the country. The protest was called by the Oxford branches of the Stop the War Coalition, CND, and Palestine Solidarity Campaign. City Councillor Dr. Hosni Jafari Marbini is an NHS doctor who came to the UK from Iran as a child. In a video message, she said, "We're devastated, worried sick about our friends and family in Tehran, Isfahan and Mazandaran, all of our beautiful homeland, who are still trying to make us laugh when we do occasionally get through to them, despite it all. They are sending each other messages about how to protect themselves against nuclear radiation poisoning. Can you even imagine that?"
An Oxford newsagent has been crowned the best convenience store and off-licence in the UK. Honeys of the High in High Street, Oxford City Centre, has seen off competition from across the UK and Ireland to win two top awards from one of Europe's biggest employers' associations. Owners Hyten and Kinnard Patel earned the title of Convenience Store of the Year and the Independent Newsagent of the Year at the 2025 Fed Awards. Honeys of the High was also highly commended in the Home News Delivery Retailer of the Year category. The glittering ceremony was hosted by TV presenter, magician and YouTube star Ben Hanlon in Birmingham on June the 18th. The judges said, "Following up on last year's win for Best Customer Service, Hyten and Kinnari demonstrated their continued development of the business while still ensuring that the customer remains king. Judges were impressed with their focus on detail and novel ideas like handwritten labels for their wine range, helping customers to choose both the wine and the right accompanying meal selections. They praised the well-lit, clear and easy-to-shop displays and breadth of stock, including foreign news titles. Kinnari said, "This is our second year at the Fed Awards and we were fortunate enough to be finalists in three categories. We're delighted to have won two awards and received a highly commended award."
Primary school children in Oxford have been getting to grips with lacrosse ahead of its return to the Olympics. 60 Year 5 and 6 pupils from North Hinksey, Botley and West Oxford Primary Schools attended the inaugural West Oxford Primary Schools Lacrosse Festival on Wednesday, June the 11th. Six teams took part in the round-robin tournament, with North Hinksey Church of England Primary School emerging as the winners. Oxford City Lacrosse Club has been working with the West Oxford Schools Partnership to introduce the sport to children before its return to the Olympics in Los Angeles in 2028. World-famous chef Raymond Blanc's restaurant has been named among the global elite by prestigious hospitality guide La Liste. Every year it publishes its 1,000 best restaurants around the world, and Le Manoir aux Quatre Saisons has been named close to the top. In addition, the restaurant's related hotel, Le Manoir aux Quatre Saisons, a Belmond hotel, has been named in the 1,000 best hotels list. Launched a decade ago, the French guide uses a data algorithm to compile its listicles, factoring in multiple forms of online content, including press reviews and international dining guides, as well as Michelin and other rankings. Specialising in French cuisine, Mr. Blanc's Le Manoir aux Quatre Saisons is based in Great Milton, South Oxfordshire. It has 2 Michelin stars and in La Liste's guide achieved a 95% score, behind the UK's highest entry and joint top overall, L'Enclume in Grangeover Sands. Meanwhile, the accompanying luxury hotel received a 99% score, just below the UK's highest entries, the Connaught and the Savoy, both based in London. That should be Savoy, sorry about that. Overall, 75 UK restaurants and 100 hotels are within the lists, with Le Manoir aux Quatre Saisons being the only Oxfordshire entry on both. The restaurant was first opened in 1984, 41 years ago, and often uses ingredients from the hotel's own gardens. Two items about steam trains now. First of all, the 75th anniversary of a major event in the steam preservation movement was celebrated in Appleford on Saturday and Sunday, June the 21st and 2nd, marking 3/4 of a century since Arthur Napper and Miles Chetwynd Stapleton, DFC, had a race with their traction engines. It was this event that, unbeknown to them, played a significant role in forming the steam preservation movement. Every engine and exhibit that attended an Appleford rally between 1950 and 1971 was invited to the event. Traditional ring events, photo opportunities, photographic displays, and plenty of steam nostalgia entertained visitors. People also dressed up in 1950s themed clothing throughout the weekend, and visitors contributed photos to a photo display of Appleford rallies down the years. A spokesperson for the event said, "What a weekend it's been. We've worked hard to recreate the magic and atmosphere of the Appleford rallies that ran from 1952 to 1970. And then here's another one. Steam will return to an historic railway line almost 60 years after its last journey. The Bletchley and Bicester section of the old Varsity line, closed to passengers in 1967, will welcome its first steam service in decades this October. The Varsity Explorer, a steam special announced by the Railway Touring Company, will run on Saturday, October the 25th, beginning in Slough and picking up passengers in Reading, Oxford Parkway and Bicester Village. Kelly Osborne, Managing Director of the Railway Touring Company, said, "We are constantly looking for new and special routes for our mainline steam excursions. It's great to see former railways being reinstated, and we know rail enthusiasts, as well as anyone seeking an interesting day out, will appreciate this opportunity to travel by steam."
During a crackdown, police have seized illegal e-scooters in Oxford city centre. The officers from the North East Neighbourhood Policing Team said the e-scooters were being ridden on a public road. Privately owned e-scooters are not legal for use on public roads, pavements or cycle lanes. Only rental e-scooters from government trial schemes are legal, where users must submit their licences and age to use them. The officers said that using an illegal e-scooter could lead to it being seized, to a fine or to penalty points being dished out, and even prosecution by road traffic offences. A spokesman for the police said, "These scooters may seem fun, but they pose serious dangers to riders and to the public, especially pedestrians. Thank you to the community for your ongoing support. We will continue to keep our streets safe. E-scooters are classed as motor vehicles under the Road Traffic Act 1988, which means you need to have a licence and insurance to ride one in public. It is not possible to get insurance for privately owned e-scooters. This means it is illegal to use them on the road or in public spaces such as parks, street pavements and shopping centres. Visitors and residents of Oxford can hire e-scooters as part of a government trial. European micro-mobility company Void Technology runs the e-scooter trial in Oxford. The government has confirmed that the Oxford trial has been extended until May the 31st, 2026.
Oxfordshire County Council has launched a survey to ask local people for thoughts about its proposal for a single unitary council for the county. The County Council is proposing one unified council for Oxfordshire, which it says will create stronger, simpler services that are closer to communities, cost-effective and connected. This includes protecting and enhancing key frontline services like social care for children and adults and public health, which are currently delivered at county scale. In December 2024, the government announced that it wanted to move away from two-tier local government structures. It invited councils in Oxfordshire and other two-tier areas to develop proposals for new unitary structures and submit these by November the 28th. To help inform the development of these proposals, residents, businesses and organisations are now being asked for their views. Councillor Liz Leffman, leader of Oxfordshire County Council, said, "It is our view that a single unitary council for Oxfordshire will create stronger, simpler services closer to the communities we serve. This one council will enable services to be delivered more equitably across Oxfordshire, with residents in every part of the county able to benefit. A single county-wide unitary council will provide both the scale and financial resilience that Oxfordshire needs and bring decision-making closer to communities by partnering with town and parish councils. Our county is highly connected, from school transport right through to how our economy works and beyond. We believe we can maintain and strengthen that connection through a new, progressive, single council for all Oxfordshire residents, businesses, institutions and investors. This is an ambitious county which is home to a globally leading critical mass of science, technology, learning, intellect and innovation. It is critical to Oxfordshire's future that we maintain the links between our great universities and organisations developing advanced technology, including on Bicester, Culham, Harwell and Milton Park campuses, so that our county can drive innovation and inclusive growth that benefits everyone across the region." Ms. Leffman added, "A single county-wide unitary council simplifies services for residents, businesses and investors and makes them stronger with clear accountability. There would be one front door to access all services from social care to housing, public health, community safety, planning and everything in between. There would be one set of councillors, one chief executive and senior management team and one set of buildings. One single unitary council for Oxfordshire means no disruption for existing county-wide vital frontline services, including those delivered in partnership, such as adult and children's social care and public health."
The need for an Oxford congestion charge and an expansion of the zero emission zone, ZEZ, has been questioned by a councillor after a recent report found air pollution has fallen in the city. Oxford City Council's annual air quality report for 2024 showed that air pollution levels fell by 10% from the previous year. Now, a plan to introduce a temporary £5 congestion charge on several city roads went to public consultation. on Monday, June the 23rd, and a decision on whether they go ahead will be made in September. Councillor David Henwood, Shadow Cabinet Member for Transport Management, said, "While the fall in air pollution should be celebrated, it also raises questions over whether these transport measures are required." He said, "The latest air quality data for Oxford is undoubtedly good news. The city is now exceeding national targets, with average mean levels of air pollution showing significant improvement. Recent improvements in air quality challenge the rationale for a congestion charge, particularly in a city centre that doesn't experience significant congestion. Air quality is improving. Transparency is essential. And before introducing further restrictions, we must ask, are they truly necessary?" Councillor Andrew Gant, Cabinet Member for Transport Management, said, "These air quality statistics are really positive news. It's great to see the investment by ourselves, the government and the bus companies and the electric buses in the city is paying off. The drop in harmful chemicals is significant on high bus traffic routes. There's no safe level of air pollution, and so we must not rest on our laurels, and we have no intention of doing so. Our plans for travel in this city are designed to make this situation even better." In February, Councillor Henwood unsuccessfully put forward a motion to the City Council asking for extra data to support the previous 2023 air quality report, which would show what the air pollution levels were in the expanded ZEZ zone. He said this data would have served as a valuable post-COVID benchmark, providing a clearer picture of current air quality trends and allowing for better informed decisions moving forward. "It enables us to measure improvements accurately and assess whether additional restrictions like ZEZ expansion or congestion charges are justified or not." The 2024 report also found that air pollution fell within low traffic neighbourhood areas and their boundary roads. "My comment is, of course, that traffic has fallen because people don't want to drive into Oxford anymore, which is possibly what they wanted."
An Oxford University library featured in the Harry Potter films has been shortlisted as one of the 10 most beautiful libraries in the world. The Duke Humphreys Library, part of the Bodleian Libraries at Oxford University, has been shortlisted for the award from specialist travel guide 1000 Libraries. Harry Potter fans may recognise the space's interior, which was used as the Hogwarts Library in the first three films of the franchise. Bodleian Libraries said in a statement, "We're thrilled that the Duke Humphreys Library has been shortlisted as one of the top 10 most beautiful libraries in the world by 1000 Libraries, but we need your help to make the top 10. Please vote for the Duke Humphreys Library." The Duke Humphreys Library is one of the reading rooms at the Bodleian Old Library, one of the oldest in Europe, dating to between 1450 and 1480. Named after the first Duke of Gloucester, it houses rare manuscripts from the medieval period, as well as maps, music, manuscripts, theology and art materials. Travel publication 1000 Libraries, dedicated to celebrating literary travel, put together the top 10 most beautiful libraries list, leaving it up to book lovers to vote on which they think is deserving of the title.
Oxford United have discovered the date when a decision will be made on their plans for a new stadium. The U's submitted a planning application to Chartwell District Council for a 16,000 capacity stadium at the Triangle, south of Kidlington Roundabout, at the end of February 2024. United have confirmed that the Council's planning department is in the final stages of completing a report for the stadium proposals. The club has also revealed that the planning application will be heard by the Council's Planning Committee on July the 31st. The Ewes said in a statement, following the latest review, the club are continuing to work with the council's team with the aim of securing a positive recommendation for the development plans. United's development director, Jonathan Clark, said, With the recent review showing our responses are nearly complete, we can all focus on securing a positive recommendation for our plans. We have made it very clear that meeting the July planning committee date is critical if the club are to maintain the required timeline to secure our future. An update posted by the council yesterday said that there is current consultation running until July the 5th, which has been publicised by site notices, press notices and on the council's Oxford United Planning website page. This relates to an updated biodiversity metric and ecology response. Additional information has also been received, including LVIA landscape and visual impact assessment clarifications, community benefits and an updated planning statement. In addition to this, the council is awaiting the receipt of further environmental information, which is statutorily required to be formally consulted upon for a period of 30 days. When it is received, this information will be available on the council's website. This consultation will be publicised in the normal way by site notices, press notices and on the council's Oxford United Planning website page. It is anticipated that the application will be presented for consideration at the planning committee meeting taking place on the 31st of July. It was announced last month that the Ewes and Landlords Fiocca Group have signed a short-term licence extension for the Kassam Stadium, allowing the club to stay there for a maximum of two additional sessions or seasons. The licence, which was previously going to expire on June 30th next year, will now run for at least one more year with an option to extend for a maximum of one further year, depending on United receiving planning approval for the triangle. Following this, no more extensions or lease agreements will be possible.
An Oxford-based gynaecologist is calling for greater public awareness of the virus that causes the vast majority of cervical cancer cases. Professor Karen Hellner says more needs to be done to educate women about human papilloma virus, HPV, and the importance of regular cervical screening as part of Cervical Screening Awareness Week, which ran from June the 19th to 24th. The consultant gynaecologist, who works in both Oxford and London, said HPV isn't something that is usually picked up in routine STI screening or treated with antibiotics. It's transmitted through intimate contact, not just sexual intercourse, and that includes skin-to-skin contact and the use of sex toys. But because it's not classed as a traditional STI, it causes a lot of confusion. Professor Hellner explained misunderstandings about HPV mean many women believe they are not at risk. She said many women in long-term relationships believe they're not at risk. Others assume a negative STI screen means they're in the clear. But HPV can lie dormant for years, even decades. We often hear things like, "But I've been with my partner for 10 years," or "My STI check was fine." But the virus could have been present all that time without causing any symptoms. There is currently no treatment for HPV, and Professor Hellner stressed the importance of prevention and early detection. She said you can be vaccinated against it before exposure and you can detect it through screening, but once you have it, there is no medication, supplements or therapy that can clear it. That is purely down to your immune system. Around 90% of women clear the virus naturally, but the remaining 10% risk developing cell changes that could lead to cervical cancer. This, Professor Hellner said, is why cervical screening is so crucial. She continued, Cervical screening isn't about shaming women or making assumptions. It's about making early detection and monitoring, which saves lives. We need to encourage uptake of NHS smear tests, but also be transparent about the added value private healthcare can offer, like extended HPV typing, detailed gynaecological assessments, and continuity of care. If high-risk HPV is found during screening, the next step is careful observation. Professor Hellner added, "We don't treat HPV directly. Instead, we monitor for persistent, high-grade cell changes. In some cases, surgical removal or laser treatment may be necessary, but that comes with its own risks, especially for women who hope to have children. You can't remove part of the cervix without consequences, which is why expert assessment is so important." Professor Hellner is currently leading the Gynecological Steering Committee for the new Welbeck Oxford Centre.
Oxford City Centre is getting a new ice cream shop after plans were approved by the City Council. Zeki Interiors made the change of use application to turn a former jeweller on Turl Street into a gelato shop, along with internal alterations. The plans were submitted on behalf of Aromi Cafe Limited, a Sicilian eatery, which currently has 3 eat-in and takeaway shops in Cambridge. The planning documents say the proposal will be beneficial to the building, the vitality of the city centre and other commercial businesses on Turl Street, and the considerable heritage assets in this part of Oxford. The works to the existing floors would include fitting out the basement area to provide storage and staff facilities, repairing and decorating the windows to the rear courtyard, installing a new service counter and stripping out the existing display counters. The building lies directly opposite Lincoln College Library, alongside Walters of Oxford, Missing Bean, the Oxford Wine Company and the Mitre Hotel, within the Oxford Central Conservation Area.
Oxford University researchers have revealed that Uber's algorithmic pricing system is leaving both drivers and passengers out of pocket. The study shows that dynamic pricing increases fares for passengers, reduces driver earnings, and boosts Uber's revenue share. The team from the Department of Computer Science analysed data from 258 UK drivers over 1.5 million trips between 2016 and 2024. A significant change was noticed after 2023, when Uber introduced a dynamic pricing algorithm. It was found that passengers now pay more per trip, yet drivers' earnings have dropped. After adjusting for inflation, drivers' hourly income decreased from over £22 to a little over £19 before operating costs. Additionally, drivers now spend more unpaid time waiting for ride requests. Lead author, Associate Professor Ruben Binns, said, "The higher the value of the trip, the more of a cut Uber takes. So the more the customer pays, the less the driver actually earns per minute." The study also revealed that Uber's commission increased from about 25% to 29%, and in some instances Uber claimed more than half of the fare. The research highlights the growing disparity between customer payments and driver earnings. The researchers believe this raises questions about transparency and fairness.
A new war memorial has been unveiled at a former RAF base in Oxfordshire. The Horser sculpture at Harwell Science and Innovation Campus was revealed ahead of the 81st anniversary of D-Day on June the 6th. It pays tribute to the Horser gliders that took off from RAF Harwell, now the site of the Science and Business Park, during the Second World War. It is estimated that 3,800 Horser gliders were built during the war, constructed almost entirely from 3-ply timber with a cotton canvas covering. Jim Stretton, Managing Director of Harwell Campus, said, Harwell has a proud legacy of science, innovation and service. As we unveil the horse's sculpture, we honour the extraordinary courage of those who took off from this very site on the eve of D-Day. This powerful piece not only preserves their memory, but ensures their stories continue to inspire generations to come. The sculpture commemorates the 6th Airborne Division, No. 68 Group RAF, and the Glider Pilot Regiment. It was created by Oxfordshire artist Charlotte Holmes and sits alongside the existing Harwell Memorial Stone on the campus. Ms. Holmes said, "It is so important to tell the stories of these young people who fought for peace. I wanted to commemorate them in a contemporary way because war is not a historical concern. It has been an honour to learn about their experiences and to share the stories of the young men who took off from RAF Harwell 81 years ago. Engraved metal ingots set into the surrounding brick paving share fragments of testimony for those people who flew and fought in the gliders. The design is inspired by the fuselage of the Horsa gliders. Inside, up to 28 servicemen sat in near darkness, flying without engines and unable to turn back. RAF Harwell was home to No. 38 Group RAF, the 6th Airborne Division and the Glider Pilot Regiment. The crews departed from the site on the night before D-Day as part of Operation Overlord. The 6th Airborne Division remained on the front line for 82 days, suffering 4,457 casualties. David Drew, County President for the Royal British Legion in Berkshire and the Vale of Whitehorse, said, "We are very grateful to the team at Harwell Campus who, with this significant sculpture and other means, intend to keep alive the memory of those who served and flew from RAF Harwell." Councillor Bethia Thomas, leader of Vale of Whitehorse District Council, said, "We are proud to support this remarkable commemoration at Harwell. The Horsa sculpture reminds us of the district's role in shaping history and of the individuals whose courage helped secure our freedom. It is a fitting legacy for our community and for future generations."
The auction of a rare book collection on philosophy made a whopping £13,000 sale in the city. A collection of books by renowned Austrian-British philosopher Karl Popper have sold for £13,000 after being donated to Oxfam's Headington shop. The books, which included several volumes inscribed by Karl himself, were sold at auction through prestigious auction house Bonhams following research by an Oxfam volunteer, who discovered what they were worth. Nina Curtis, a long-standing volunteer who spotted the collection, said, "The Karl Popper books were donated to Oxfam a while ago, and although we immediately recognised that they had value, it was difficult to assess their worth because of the nature of the inscriptions and the two philosophers associated with them. We were therefore encouraged by Bonham's enthusiasm when we approached them and absolutely delighted with the result of the sale, which certainly exceeded our expectations. The 12-book collection included influential works such as The Logic of Scientific Discovery and The Open Society and Its Enemies. Personal inscriptions from Sir Karl and links to other notable philosophers attracted the interest of collectors and academics. Sir Karl was one of the most influential philosophers of science of the 20th century, making original contributions to the field, and was knighted by Queen Elizabeth II in 1965. Oxfam shops receive thousands of book donations every year, from popular fiction to specialist titles and unexpected finds. Volunteers are essential to sorting, researching and pricing these items, who can, like Ms. Curtis, occasionally find themselves uncovering hidden gems. Ian Falkingham, Oxford's donated goods strategy lead, said, "We're delighted with the success of the sale and incredibly thankful to everyone who supports Oxfam by donating books. This generous contribution turned out to be something quite special, and it's a real privilege to see it achieve such a fantastic result. The funds raised will support Oxfam's work with communities facing poverty and injustice around the world at a time when it is urgently needed. We're especially grateful to our wonderful volunteers, as well as Bonhams, for their expertise and enthusiasm throughout the process. Their involvement was key to making this sale such a success. Funds raised from sales like the Popper Collection will go towards Oxfam's global goal of tackling poverty, injustices, inequalities, to create a world where everyone has the power to thrive, not just survive. Oxfam accepts donations of pre-loved clothing, accessories, shoes, jewellery, homeware and toys, books, music and technology, as long as they're in good condition. More information can be found in-store or via the Oxfam website."
The Prime Minister, top government officials and Oxfordshire politicians have expressed their shock and outrage after a pro-Palestinian demonstration at RAF Brize Norton. Counter-terrorism officials are investigating after activists broke into the UK's largest RAF base near Carterton and caused damage to aircraft on the site's runway on June the 20th. Riding up to the planes on electric scooters and filming themselves, the protesters sprayed red paint into the engines of two Airbus Voyager aircraft and onto the runway, and did further damage with crowbars before leaving a Palestinian flag behind and escaping undetected. The action has been claimed by Palestine Action, a campaign group which released video footage from the break-in. The group said that RAF Brize Norton was targeted because of flights which depart from it daily to RAF Akrotiri in Cyprus, a base used for military operations in Gaza and across the Middle East. A spokesperson for Palestine Action said, "Despite publicly condemning the Israeli government, Britain continues to send military cargo to fly spy planes over Gaza and refuel US-Israeli fighter jets. Britain isn't just complicit, it's an active participant in the Gaza genocide and war crimes across the Middle East." By decommissioning two military planes, Palestine Action have directly intervened in the genocide and prevented crimes against the Palestinian people. The break-in and criminal damage has been condemned from all sides of the political spectrum as the full force of public officials come down on the apparent threat to UK security. Specialist counter-terrorism officers are working closely with officers from Thames Valley Police and the Ministry of Defence Police. Some politicians have demanded that the incident be targeted as terrorism and the perpetrators members of a terrorist group. And this, I think, has happened since then. Prime Minister Keir Starmer said, "The act of vandalism committed at RAF Brize Norton is disgraceful. Our armed forces represent the very best of Britain and put their lives on the line for us every day. It is our responsibility to support those who defend us." A full security review of the UK defence estate has been commissioned by Defence Secretary John Healey, who said he was disturbed by the incident. He said, "I'm really disturbed that this happened and have ordered an investigation and a review of wider security at all our bases," Mr. Healy said. A number 10 spokesman said that a full review of security at RAF Brize Norton is underway and no planned aircraft operations were disrupted. They added, "We treat all breaches of security very seriously, and where there is suspected criminal activity, we will take the necessary steps to investigate and prosecute in line with long-standing principles." The Ministry of Defence said it strongly condemns the vandalism of RAF assets and is working closely with police on the investigation. In Oxfordshire too, politicians have spoken out against the attack, with MP Charlie Maynard for Witney describing the action as stupid and dangerous. Mr Maynard said, "We need to establish how this happened and what can be done in future to make sure no further breaches occur. These reported actions were stupid and dangerous. They need to be fully investigated and there must be consequences for these criminal actions." It was also said that the aircraft are used for our military personnel to support security and peace around the world. This action does nothing to support Gaza or our push for peace and stability in the Middle East. Thames Valley Police said officers are working closely with the Ministry of Defence and RAF Brize Norton to investigate the criminal damage, and investigations to locate and arrest those responsible are ongoing. Police and Crime Commissioner for the Thames Valley, Matthew Barber, said, "The break-in raises serious questions about the airbase's defence and, by extension, other military sites across the county."
Independent bookshops in Oxfordshire have taken part in celebrations and hosted events to mark a special week in the calendar. Independent Bookshop Week was an initiative from the Booksellers Association to recognise the important work of independent bookshops, bolster the industry and celebrate literature. Bookshops in Abingdon, Wantage, Oxford and around the country welcomed big names in the literary world to celebrate with them. Daunt Books Summertown in Oxford hosted Philip Pullman in conversation with Neil Frizzell after he announced the completion of the sixth and final book in his Dark Materials series and the Book of Dust trilogy, The Rosed Field. Andy Merton at the shop said, "We had a great independent bookshop week here and kicked everything off with our first ever festival day of events, which we held in our garden, open for the first time, here at the shop." The shop also welcomed children's authors Neil Cameron and Rachel Rivers Koo, as well as Barbara Trapido, Eve Chase, and crime writers like Mick Heron and Olivia Kiernan. A highlight was Mr. Merton's one-man performance of Sherlock Holmes's story, The Adventures of Charles Augustus Milverton, as a classic experience of storytelling in its true form. Independent Bookshop Week can prove a lifeline to shops as the industry is in decline, with figures from the Booksellers Association revealing the UK has had a net loss of 5 indie shops this year so far. In the South East, just one bookshop has opened, compared to 5 closures. Particular losses have been felt in specialist genre bookshops, like children's bookshops, community-focused shops serving marginalised books, hobby bookshops and faith shops. This was described as distressing by the association because of these shops' historic charitable and community outreach work. Merrill Halls, managing director of the Booksellers Association, said this year's Indie Week came at a pivotal moment as bookshops faced pressures from several fronts, like competition with cheap online retailers and growing pressures to meet consumers' needs.
Calls for Oxford City Council to be tougher on bad landlords have stepped up as campaigners accuse them of failing to protect renters and by siding with criminal landlords. Acorn, a union which focuses on housing and renters' rights, has launched a campaign urging the City Council to take a zero-tolerance policy to help prevent revenge evictions from making complaints. There have been 430 complaints from tenants in the last year, but the City Council has only served 18 improvement notices in the last year. They have also not prosecuted any landlords in the last 3 years. Councillor Linda Smith, Cabinet Member for Housing, said that they used other tools to deal with these issues and issuing formal notices may be disproportionate and delay the resolution of the issue. However, Acorn's Oxford branch argue that the council should send formal improvement notices at the earliest opportunity, pursue the maximum possible penalty when notices are ignored, and to refuse licences to landlords who have had improvement notices served against them. Members of this campaign gathered at Oxford Town Hall to lobby councillors ahead of a cabinet meeting. Naomi Gann, Acorn's lead organiser in the South East, said, "Our members have faced really shocking treatment in Oxford and have been left to live in dangerous homes with things like serious damp and mould and collapsed ceilings. They've also been victims of revenge eviction when people are thrown out of their homes by their landlords and given no-fault eviction just for raising complaints with them. Oxford City Council are not doing enough to protect renters from this really appalling treatment. Rather than issue formal notices that compel the landlords to do the repairs, they're issuing informal notices, even with really serious complaints. As far as we're concerned, the council at the moment is siding with criminal landlords instead of renters. If the council gives formal notice, the tenant can get legal proof that there's been a revenge eviction if the landlord kicks them out. But if there's just an informal notice, there's no legal protection." Green councillor Emily Kerr, one of several councillors supporting the campaign, said, "While many landlords treat their tenants with respect, there are sadly several bad landlords who profit from the misery of tenants too scared to call them out." Councillor Smith said the City Council is committed to protecting renters and to taking action against bad housing conditions. She added, "We intervene in 100% of cases where serious hazards are identified. These are in Category 1 or High Category 2. Our approach to enforcement is guided by the government's regulators code, which requires councils to act proportionately and use enforcement action only where necessary."
Police have launched a fraud investigation following reports an Oxford City Centre car park payment machine was stealing money from drivers. Shortly after using the machines at Worcester Street car park, three customers said money had been taken or attempts had been made to take money from their bank accounts. It was later revealed that fraudsters had placed skimming devices disguised as legitimate card readers over the actual readers on City Council pay machines. These can capture card data without the card owner's knowledge and allow scammers to take funds from the account. Oxford City Council warned car park users it had identified the scam, and now Thames Valley Police has announced an investigation. A spokesperson for Oxford City Council said, "Thames Valley Police is reviewing the case." The council statement added, "Our officers are making frequent visits to sites to ensure that any suspect device is removed from the machines. They have been briefed to check all machines, stay alert and vigilant, and report any suspicious activity immediately." The spokesperson added that the car park pay machine suppliers have been made aware of the issue and are alerting others within the wider industry. "We will continue to monitor the situation and report any further occurrences to the police," said the council statement. Reportedly, a common sign of this form of fraud is a card declined message on the machine, prompting users to move to another, by which time the card may already have been compromised. Worcester Street is a 24-hour open-air car park accessed from Hythebridge Street and Park End Street. It has a pay-and-display payment system, and machines do not accept cash, although a telephone payment system with a valid bank card, as well as Ringo app payments, is available. The car park is one of six owned and operated by the council in the city centre, though the council has not reported any other incidents of fraudulent activity at other locations. Guidance issued by the City Council to car park users includes advising customers to inspect the card reader before inserting a bank card and not to use the machine if anything seems irregular. Messages on screen and bank notifications or warnings could be red flags that something is wrong. It also said that Ringo, a mobile car park payment app, can be used as an alternative method to avoid bank card fraud. The council asked car park users to report any suspicious activity to police immediately by phoning 101. Thames Valley Police has been contacted for further comment on the investigation.
Three Oxford City Centre shops featured in the Oxford Mail at the start of last week. A new bakery, a proposed gelato, which is ice cream shop, and a double-winning newsagent off-licence. Bakery chain Need, K-N-E-A-D, today opens a new shop in Oxford High Street. The store is in the premises of the former Hobbs Women's Boutique. The owners said they were delighted to have arrived in the city. The shop is the company's fourth bakery and the first in this county. It also runs stores in Gloucestershire. Customers can expect a selection of pastries, patisserie, cakes and savoury treats, and they can dine in or take away. They could also try sausage rolls, great taste awarded pecan and maple Danish and almond croissants, and Taste of the West awarded sea salt and rosemary focaccia and lemon meringue pie. And the owners say that diners can expect a top-notch brew from extract coffee roasters in Brazil. A statement from Need said, adding a further string to their bow, the award-winning bakery has perfected the recipe for brownies, blondies and flapjacks, which can be picked up in store for a sweet treat, or have them directly to your home via Need's postal service. The company was founded by John Hawes and Chris Biggs over their shared passion for pastry and baking.
An East Oxford restaurant's food stall at Glastonbury Festival was saved by a local business which replaced vital stolen equipment. Taste Tibet, Oxford's legendary Tibetan restaurant in Magdalen Road and mobile food stall, faced the prospect of skipping its appearance at the Somerset Festival this year after being targeted by thieves. The team were left stressed and hurt after 20 wooden pallets, essential to the food stall, used to stop the roaming restaurant from sinking into the festival mud, were stolen from outside a storage unit in Cowley. Business partner Julie Kleeman said it was a planned hit and was especially painful because it's the second year the business has suffered this kind of theft. At the time, she said, "Last year we had to call the police out as the guys were loading them into their van in broad daylight, but this time it was an undercover job. The pallets are worth more to us than they are to whoever lifted them. We can't trade without them, so if anyone knows of any going spare in Oxford, please shout." After a desperate appeal from the restaurant, Eco Delivery and Storage Company Pedal & Post in Binsey Lane, West Oxford, offered 20 replacement pallets. Taste Tibet said, "The amazing Pedal & Post have come through with a full set of pallets for us. We cannot thank everyone enough for sharing and offering your one pallet or 20. Community is everything." Christopher Benton, chief executive and founder of Pedal & Post, said, "When we heard about Taste Tibet's situation, we didn't hesitate for a second. They're not just a local business, they're a core part of Oxford's food scene. Their food, values and community spirit are second to none. It was heartbreaking to hear about the theft just before such a major event, and we knew we had to step in to help. Sorting out 20 pallets felt like the least we could do to help Taste Tibet, and we're likely best placed to help as we have a lot of pallets in our depot at any one time. We're so proud to have played a small part in getting them to the festival, and we hope all the people at Glastonbury get to try Taste Tibet, as we're lucky enough to have them in our city all year round. Taste Tibet is known to serve the best momo dumplings, curry and Tibetan chai tea this side of the Himalayas, and opened its first fixed site in East Oxford in November 2020 after starting out as a food stall in Gloucester Green Market in 2014. Plans to turn a hairdresser's in Oxford into a takeaway selling hot food have been refused over concerns it would cause noise, disturbance and odours to neighbours. Mr. Ahmed submitted a change of use application to turn the hairdresser's on the ground floor of 4 Grays Road, Headington, into a takeaway in April. The application was refused by Oxford City Council officers under delegated powers. The officer's report noted that the planning application did not include a noise impact assessment, nor did it include any information about how they would manage the smell. It said that the council cannot be satisfied that the development would not result in unacceptable noise and disturbance levels to the residential flats above and surrounding the site, or that the development would suitably and appropriately manage odour control. It added that takeaway would be in walking distance of 2 nearby schools and where children congregate, and would cause harm to the amenities of the surrounding area.
Harking Back with Emma Brennan. Emma is an award-winning writer for the Oxford Mail, and with a fondness for yesteryear, she recently harked back to boozy trips, sausage and chips, and foreign cheese that whiffed. Mini breaks have apparently become a thing in recent years, with people jetting off on cheap flights to the continent for a weekend in search of sun, sea and sangria. But with the weather warming up now, my mind has been taken back to the affordable summer 1970s version of a mini break. A day excursion by coach to the seaside or some other tourist hotspot. Instead of having to drive many miles to an airport before waiting to board a plane, we were able to take a bus direct from our village to a coastal town all for a few pounds. Admittedly, it was Walton-on-the-Naze, not the French Riviera, but those hardy souls who could stick a very long coach ride round winding country lanes would even make it to the continent and back in a day. My cousin, Suzanne, and I were reminiscing about our 70s and 80s seaside coach trips, which we made with my auntie. Suzanne would usually be sent to book the tickets, which cost no more than £3, at the coach company office down the road. On the day of the excursion, we would parcel up our swimming stuff along with a packed lunch before heading down to the bus stop, which was on the pub forecourt. What would have been an hour's journey by car took about an hour and a half of back road travel before we reached our destination. When we finally arrived, the pair of us would go off and amuse ourselves at the pier, having a go on the arcade games or the slippery dip slide, before taking a literal dip in the usually freezing cold sea. Then we'd reunite with my auntie for lunch, tucking into our peanut butter or jam sandwiches, or if we were lucky, we might get battered sausage and chips. Really simple stuff by today's standards, but it provided a welcome change of scenery, plus we felt an air of independence going on the bus. If we thought a 2-hour trip to the coast was arduous, Suzanne also recalls a village day trip by coach and ferry to Zeebrugge in Belgium. The ferry trip alone took over 5 hours. It was a big deal, which meant the family persevered with the trip, despite Suzanne hurting her back in a fall the day before, plus her younger brother fainting in the ferry terminal. She recalled, "I think by the time we got to Zeebrugge, we only had about 2 hours in Belgium. We went to a beach for a short while and then back to the bus and ferry." On occasion, my dad would take a coach to France with his siblings. It meant getting the bus from neighbouring village, which took them to a ferry port, about 2.5 hours away, to catch a ferry to Calais. As there were no supermarkets that sold cheap alcohol in those days, the idea was to go to France to stock up on duty-free wine and in lots of cases, cigarettes from the hypermarkets. Sometimes Dad would bring back some French cheese, which was rather high by the time it had spent another 5 hours in transit on the way home. On one trip, he bought Mum a Le Creuset casserole dish, something she'd always wanted. However, after lugging it around Calais, nursing it across the English Channel, and excitingly presenting it to Mum, she decided it was too big. She has gone on to use it frequently, though, over the ensuing years. The coach trip from our village started long before the 1970s, though, with my grandparents and parents' generation also benefiting from the local coach company's schedule. From the early 1900s, there would be charabanc outings to the seaside, which set off from the pub early in the morning. One villager, Roger Lane, told me a tale about a particular trip to Southend when he was young. Apparently, the excited locals boarded the coach and had only travelled a few miles up the road before, deciding to stop at a pub for what was meant to be a short break. But they ended up staying in the pub until afternoon closing time, which in those days was 2 p.m, with many of the passengers a lot merrier than when they set off. Roger said, "We made it to Southend eventually, but we didn't get very long there." In those days, many people lived and worked in their home village, so the annual coach trips would have been an important date in the social calendar, bringing most of the local community together. Yes, it was a modest adventure compared to the range of travel options youngsters have these days.
Hedgehogs are more likely to need help from the Oxfordshire public than any other wildlife this summer, according to the RSPCA. The charity is encouraging residents to take action as part of its new Local Animal Hero campaign. New findings from the RSPCA's 2025 Animal Kindness Index show 53% of people in the South East do not feel confident about what to do if they find sick or injured wildlife. The new campaign aims to equip people with the knowledge and confidence to help these animals through a step-by-step guide and a new training video. Dr. Maya Rose Craig, RSPCA supporter, ornithologist and environmentalist, said, "The RSPCA's Animal Kindness Index shows that while many people in the southeast want to do their bit, many would struggle to know what to do if they came across an animal in need. By learning to become a local animal hero, anyone can find out what to do if they find a sick or injured animal who needs help. Learning how to safely handle small wildlife or pets and building a rescue box to keep in your car can make a big difference for animals. No matter where in the country you are, there are so many different animals that share our environment, and it's up to us to help make sure they are living their best lives this summer too. By doing a kind act this summer, we can all help to create a better world for every animal. In 2024, the RSPCA took in 9,500 hedgehogs across England and Wales, making them the most commonly rescued wild animal. Other frequently rescued species include wood pigeons, 6,500, mallard ducks, nearly 4,000, feral pigeons, nearly 3,000, and blackbirds, nearly 2,000. The RSPCA said taking injured small animals directly to a nearby vet is often the quickest way to get them professional care. Last year, more than 10,000 animals were admitted to the RSPCA's 4 wildlife centres, with more than a quarter arriving in June and July. Many were orphaned or injured due to vehicle collisions, animal attacks, or other accidents. The charity also said, "Public assistance during the summer months helps to free up frontline officers to deal with more urgent cases of cruelty and neglect." It comes as 63% of people in the South East say protecting wildlife is the most important issue the animal welfare charity should be dealing with, while more than 9 in 10 say wildlife needs to be protected in towns and cities as well as in the countryside.
A community mural created by an internationally renowned artist has brought life to an Oxfordshire town hall. The colourful display, created by Luke Emden, now brightens Chipping Norton Town Hall's upper windows with a vibrant, community-inspired design. Commissioned last summer, the mural was briefly delayed to allow for window replacements before it was installed by Hobbs Reprographics. The mural, titled Reflecting Chippy, is the result of a community-wide creative call-out asking residents, "What does Chipping Norton mean to you?" Mr. Emden said, "What made this project truly special was the community. Every person's mark tells a story of place and pride, and together they've created something utterly unique." Chipping Norton Town Council hosted a weekend of art workshops with Mr. Emden at the Town Hall and at Willow Gardens Care Home. More than 100 people took part, submitting more than 250 drawings that captured everything from landmarks and events to pets and people. Tanya Kirby, Facilities and Events Officer for Chipping Norton Town Council, said the project brought the community together with a sense of pride. She said, "It was a genuine pleasure working with local artist and super talented Luke. The workshops were full of laughter and creativity, and the way people of all ages came together was just incredible. Every piece of art that was submitted was woven together by Mr. Emden. The launch event was joyful. Watching attendees spot their own contributions in the finished mural was a truly heartwarming moment. You could feel the pride in the room." The mural features references to the Mop Fair, Bliss Mill, Mr. Snips with his hedge clippers, Pinky, Terry the Town Hall Keeper, and several well-known local cats, among other things. Mr. Emden, whose previous murals can be found in Berlin, Lisbon, London, and elsewhere, incorporates his own elements to link the artwork into a single visual story. The unveiling was marked by a public celebration with the original sketches on display, children colouring in line drawings, and an interactive chalkboard activity. A live DJ and disco lights added to the atmosphere, with Mayor Sandra Coleman even joining DJ Seb on the decks. The mural, which was funded through West Oxfordshire District Council, is now permanently on display in the upper hall windows and can be viewed at all times from the outside of the building.
A new dementia support service to meet increasing demand in Oxfordshire will be rolled out at the beginning of next year. Oxfordshire County Council has put forward a new model which aims to support those with a condition, as well as their families and unpaid carers, to live as independently, successfully and safely as possible for as long as possible within their communities. The service will cost the council an extra £56,000 a year compared to its existing contract. The decision was made by Councillor Tim Bearder, Cabinet Member for Adults, at the Delegated Decisions meeting on June the 17th. The total cost of the 10-year contract would be around £9.1 million, with £6.9 million of this being paid by the County Council. The remaining funding would be provided by the Buckinghamshire, Oxfordshire and Berkshire West Integrated Care Board. The service is expected to begin on the 1st of January 2026 and will be commissioned for 5 years, plus a possible further 5 years. A new Illusion Museum has opened in the centre of Oxford to rave reviews. Oxford Illusion Museum opened on Monday the 23rd of June in High Street, opposite the Covered Market in the city centre. Promising fun for all ages, the new experience museum offers 22 rooms of illusions over 4 floors in the extremely slim building sandwiched between 2 shops at 113 High Street. The unique building, which is Grade 2 listed and built in 1790, is just as wacky as the experiences within. Rooms to try include an upside-down room, a mirror maze, an infinity dodecahedron, glowing wands, an Alice in Wonderland-themed rabbit hole, and illusion accessories. The museum is running an ongoing contest for the visitor who posts the best illusion picture of the week, offering a £100 cash prize. Although only in its first week, the new venture has already been well reviewed, with Oxford-based review page Little Oxplorers saying they were delighted with the day out there. The review said, "I'm not a huge fan of illusions, mainly because I feel quite nauseous looking at them, but I really enjoyed it." The Oxford Illusion Museum is open 11 a.m. to 6 p.m. 7 days a week. Tickets are £14 for adults, £7 for students, and children pay your age.
That was the last news item for this week's Ox Talk. If you have any comments or feedback about Ox Talk, then please ring Margaret on a new number, 07496 062280, and do please leave your name and contact or phone number so that we can return your call. This edition and previous editions of Ox Talk can be found on our website, oxtalk.org.uk, and you can listen there or you can download an edition to listen at your leisure. And it's goodbye from me, and I wish you a peaceful week. Goodbye.
Notice to listeners of Ox Talk who use a smart speaker to access our service. There are new instructions for anyone who listens to Ox Talk using Alexa. To listen to Ox Talk in this way, you now have to use the talking newspaper skill. First, you need to enable it. Simply say, "Alexa, enable talking newspaper." Then, to listen to Ox Talk, please follow this procedure. Alexa, open talking newspaper.
Welcome to your talking newspaper skill. Please say the name of a newspaper or a town or city you would like to hear from.
Oxford.
Here are the following newspapers nearest to Oxford. Please pick a newspaper name. Oxford and District Talking News, Whitney Talking News Latest Edition, Whitney Talking News Previous Edition, Whitney Talking Magazine, Wallingford, and District Talking Newspaper. Or do you want to hear more?
Oxford and District Talking News.
Do you want to listen to Oxford and District Talking News?
Yes.
This is Oxford and District Talking News.
If you have problems listening to Ox Talk in this way, it could be due to the way that your Alexa device is set up. Please check the settings with whoever set up your device in the first place. If you still have problems, please contact Ox Talk and we will try to help.